In Dr. Carolyn L. Mazlumi and Michael Cummings are next on the program. And while they're getting settled in, I want to introduce you first to Carolyn. She's going to interview Michael for our QSOS project. Dr. Mazlumi is a historian, curator, author, lecturer, artist, mentor, founder, and facilitator. And that's just a short list. She has left her mark on many lives, including mine. From founding the African American Quilt Guild of Los Angeles in 1981 to, in 1985, founding the Women of Color Quilters Network. Mazlumi has been at the forefront of educating the public about the diversity of interpretation, styles, and techniques among African American quilters, as well as educating a younger generation of African Americans about their own history through quilts the Women of Color Quilters Network members create. Carolyn serves on the Quilt Alliance Board of Directors, and we are proud to have her demonstrating the Quilters SOS Save Our Stories Oral History Project today by conducting an interview with New York artist and quiltmaker Michael Cummings. Great, they're all set up. QSOS, as a project, will turn 20 years old in 2019. It started in 1999. And as we approach this milestone, our focus is on making the 1,000-plus interviews in this collection more accessible and more useful. If you would like to be a part of this process, there are many ways for you to volunteer, and we'd love to hear from you. You can speak to us at the registration desk, leave us your name, your contact information. We need help with data entry. What we're doing is trying to transfer all of the video or the cassettes, the old cassette tapes, into digital audio files, and then put information in a database so that it can all be accessed online easier. So if that's up your alley, let us know. If you have a background in data entry or database systems, or you're just interested in getting into that collection, let us know. We'd love to have your help. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to you, Carolyn, for you to say a few words about Michael before you begin. Okay, thank you both.
Can you hear me now? Yes. Great. Anyway, I'm here to interview Michael Cummings, one of my absolute favorite artists. Michael is a formerly trained artist, and I have to say the very first piece of art I saw by you was a painting. He's been quilting over 40 years, and very vibrant, very exciting quilts. So, I want to ask Michael, first of all, to talk a little bit about the quilt that's up here on the stage.
The quilt on stage here is called African Jazz Number 10. It's one of 12 quilts in a series that I made in 1990. It's 9 feet tall and 6 feet wide. All the quilts in the series are that size. And it came about, I was inspired to do this particular composition because I had bought a poster a few months before I started this series, and it was a photograph of three jazz musicians playing in South Africa. The photograph dated about 1950-something. And I was really fascinated by the poster because the image, they were slightly angled, and it was smoke-filled room, and the shadows on the faces of the performers created a mystifying sort of look. And I said, I looked at it and thought there were opportunities for me to make a quilt. So I bought it, and took it home, and for months I just kind of played in my mind with the idea because I do a lot of visualization before I start a quilt. I don't draw in advance or do any sort of any sketching. I just go from my mind to the fabric with a piece of chalk and start drawing. And I don't use measurements too much. It's sort of an organic process. And I just draw, put the fabric down, and I feel like I'm making a puzzle or something like that. So anyway, I bought the poster, bought it home in 1990. I decided to start this series. And in doing that, I had already taken a class on Yoruba culture. So I was familiar with African masks. I collect African masks. So it was easy to transform the narrative in the photograph into a fantasy sort of outdoor environment, which I did. And each quilt has a different mask on the performers. And you have a piano player, horn player, and a bass player. And some of the compositions, I have birds or plants or different sort of lizards or something like that moving around on them. And this quilt, after it was finished, this was number 10. And I came to this quilt and I minimized the colors, because up until the ninth quilt I had layers and layers of color. And I was sort of like saturated with color. And I said, well, let me back off and relax and just use the basic two or three colors. And that's how I achieved this particular look. But also, the piano player in particular, I had thought that the head, the back of his head, was sort of boring. So I had a Janus mask, so I put a face on the back of the head of the piano player. And I thought that made it more interesting. And so when it was all finished, I went on to make two more quilts. I was kind of pushed by friends to continue making quilt after quilt, because I thought I was going to make four, then people said six, and then they said eight, then nine, then 12, make it even dozen. So that's what I did. And then since that time, after the first year I made the quilt, Hallmark Cards picked up the image, and they put it on a note card. And it was very popular in its sales. And then also, one of the quilts went into the music library at City College here up in Harlem. Okay. And also, there's one at Michigan State University Art Museum. And there are several in collections of private collectors.
That was my next question, because I've been curating your shows. Well, curating exhibitions with your work in it for almost 30 years now.
Right.
And for those that don't know, Michael's work is in many museum and private and corporate collections around the United States. So I wanted people to know where the quilts in this particular series, which institutions they went to.
Just a side note, I took this composition and made it into a quilt for Absolute Vodka.
Right, yes.
And so the quilt is in the, what is it, the Spirits Museum in Stockholm, Sweden.
Yes.
And what I did was I took out the piano player and I substituted him for a bottle of vodka. And so that quilt's there.
And for those that don't know, Absolute, I don't know if they still do it, but they choose an artist every so often to,
I was among 14 at the time, that particular year, 1997.
Fabulous. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How did you become involved in making quilts?
Okay. it was an accident.
I'm sure. Okay.
Okay.
Tell us about it.
All right. I live in New York City, and I was working for the Department of Cultural Affairs. And at that time, I was tech director. And so that department planned all the public events in parks and cultural institutions. And we had an event at the American Craft Museum on 53rd Street, also known now as the Museum of Art and Design. And on 53rd Street, we had a banner-making event, which we hired a quilter who actually made wall hangings. And he had a display of his work in the museum. And we invited families to come in to make banners. And at the end of the week, we were going to have a parade around Fifth Avenue. And the staff was asked to make a banner. And at that time, that was when I first picked up fabric to consider some sort of art composition. I didn't know how to sew. And so after I pinned everything down, I didn't want to use glue. So somebody said, sew it. And I said, I don't know how to sew. So I took it to a tailor, and they wanted $100 to sew something that I hadn't paid more than $10 for fabric. And then I took it to a woman I knew that made artsy clothes in Soho. She wanted to teach me how to use a sewing machine. And I thought that was a very scary sort of idea. So I backed away from that. And so eventually I just went home and did what they call a running stitch and went around each piece of the applique and did a running stitch on it. And then from there, I went back to the museum to the resource library, and the director, Paul Smith at the time, kind of coached me on what books to take out for stitching and embroidery, and then told me that I could come back with my samples to show him, and he kind of critiqued things for me. And that's how I started off into quilting. But initially I was working, making wall hangings before quilting.
And I must say, the quilts that you brought here today are small compared to the quilts that you usually make. The quilts are massive, because the ones that I've worked with have been well over 8, 9, 10 feet plus.
Right, right.
So is that a favorite size that you like? You like working large as opposed to
working
small? Well,
I work on
small?
The floor. I crawl around on the floor and cut and pin, and then I drag it up to my sewing machine, which I call my dance partner. And so the floor, the studio has been 15 feet square, mm-hmm. but it's kind of getting cluttered with chairs and other things, so the floor is shrinking. However, I do like to work in a large size. And I guess my average might be 7 to 8 feet tall and about average of 6 to 7 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you still have your first quilt?
Yes, I do. I was working on an archival project a few years ago, and I pulled it out to photograph it and put it in my archives.
I still have it myself. Okay. can you tell the audience what inspires you? What inspires you to make the quilts that you make?
Well, there's a list of things, not any one direction or one thing. Current events, history, just a song could promote me to do something. Like, I have a quilt called I'll Fly Away and Take My Brother Home. Those were inspired by songs. And then I have quilts that were inspired by music. I have one called Satin Doll, and I wrote on the quilt all the names of jazz singers that I admired, and I have that. But it's across the spectrum. It could be anything. Just emotionally might affect me. One of my early quilt series was the Haitian boat people, and looking on TV and reading in the papers about how Haitians were trying to come across on rafts and everything and drowning, that affected me a lot. So I wanted to make a statement about that. So it could be politics, a lot of different things.
One of the things that I've heard here today, people have come up and asked, can you introduce me to Michael? And everybody says, oh, he's so quiet. In looking at your quilts, the quilts from day one have been so vibrant.
Right.
I mean, just absolutely vibrant with color. And there's a lot of movement and excitement in them. And especially a bevy of various materials. Mm-hmm. So can you let us know how you acquire, where you find the materials that are in your quilts? I would say most of the quilts are, to me, like three-dimensional, because they have so many, the surface design on them is intense.
Well, I have to start off with, once upon a time in Manhattan, there was an abundance of fabric stores from uptown to downtown, and now they're disappeared practically because of real estate costs and being bumped out. The last sort of fortress that I go down to where there's an abundance or has been has been in the Soho area where there are some holdouts of fabric stores. And I don't even know if they're there any longer. But I now go to the fabric district from below 42nd Street down to practically FIT. There's a lot of fabric stores. And so I shop there now. But I don't have a particular one. And I'm one of those impulse shoppers. So if I see a fabric, I might buy a yard or a half a yard and then keep it for a year or two before I use it.
Okay, but most of the quilts are more than just the fabric. You have so many found pieces on your quilt.
Right.
Like dresses, and I've seen pieces of carpet, rugs, and all kinds of stuff on
Well,
your
a lot
quilt,
of it's so. Improvisation, too.
Okay.
I kind of add that into the element because, again, I visualize the idea, but once it starts to take shape, it's on the floor, pieces are coming together. And then I might see where I could add something to make it pop a little bit more. And so I might add it. It's not in the master plan, but it just kind of happens.
Do you have any favorite techniques that
yes,
you
I
use
do.
To make
I do.
Your quilts?
All my quilts are zigzag stitching, which I love. And that was the type of process that the banner maker in the first show at the American Craft Museum, he did zigzag, and that's how I picked up that habit. If I hadn't seen his work, I might have been doing something else altogether. But he did a zigzag stitch, and in doing the zigzag stitch, he actually used colored threads to kind of complement the fabric. So I try to do that also. And then also, applique is my standard way that I construct my quilts. And I really enjoy that process.
Have you ever made any pieced quilts, any geometric
quilts? In the very beginning, I wanted to see what quilting was about, so I did standard quilts for about 6 months or so. I took some standard patterns, and I made quilts, I made the borders, I got my measuring tape and stick and all that sort of stuff, and I said, enough of this. I'll just do my sort of freeform, organic sort of thing of constructing. And so, again, I just draw by freehand. I don't really measure.
Tell us about your studio. Do you have a home studio or do you work outside? You have an outside studio?
No.
Where do you work?
I work in my home. I bought a brownstone about 30 years ago up in Harlem. And on the parlor floor in the back, it's 15 feet square. And I have shelving for fabric and finished work. And in the middle of the floor is where I actually construct my quilts. And again, I work on the floor. And then someone recently gave me knee pads because I was complaining about my knees. And so they help. And then I take whatever I'm working on to my dance partner. And we start sewing.
In that same room.
In that same room. And I also have a personal trainer. And my personal trainer I've had for years. And all that is, it's a 60-minute timer. Because I've had a 9-to-5 job for 30-something years. So I would come home to quilt. And time was very precious. So in order to keep focus, not daydream, and to actually kind of review what I've accomplished, anytime the bell rings off at 60 minutes, I would review what I've accomplished, what I want to accomplish, and then I start up the timer again. So I call that my personal trainer because it keeps me in check. Keeps me in check.
Are there any quilt groups or art groups that you belong to?
Oh, yeah. There's been a series. I first started with Empire Quilters. They were a very friendly, nurturing group, and I met new beginning quilters, and so that was a really great place to be. And then after that, I joined your group, Women of Color Quilting Networks. And then after that, I joined the, what is it, Studio Art Quilt Associates. And then after that, I belonged to an uptown group now called Harlem Needle Arts. I belong to that group. And I think I'm leaving out someone, but those are some of the groups I belong to.
That's a lot. That's a lot. What do you think makes a quilt successful? What do you think makes a quilt successful?
Well, construction, surface design, the imagination that went into it, the passion that went into it, and then it also successful would mean possibly to a large audience, so it has to appeal to a large audience in some way emotionally to make it successful, I think.
Have you made quilts or a quilt or quilts that you felt after finishing them, completing them, that were not necessarily successful?
Let's see. Maybe a little bit, but I try to bring it to a completion. Well, I tell everybody, I let the quilt tell me when it's finished.
Right.
And so I try to finish it, and if I don't think it's finished, I'll go back and work on it a little bit more. But I don't try to publicly show something that I'm not satisfied with.
Who are some of the artists, if any, that have influenced your work?
Oh, there's a list of artists. Quilter-wise,
like,
I'll have to give Susan Schein credit, because earlier on, I
another really, SACWA member.
I really was impressed, and she was like a role model with her surface design and her narrative quilts. I really liked those a great deal. But I started off as a visual painter, so I'd have to give Picasso, Matisse for their color and abstract design, and then also Romare Bearden for collage. Because I went from collage to applique, from paper to fabric. And so I did that. And then Jacob Lawrence for color as well. And then Frida Kahlo for her narrative. Georgia O'Keeffe, I really liked her a lot. And let's see. And also, music has been a great influence in me working. I always have music going on in the background. I'm very eclectic in my choice of music, but I have to give Bob Dylan credit because of a story.
Really?
I was a teenager when I got into Bob Dylan. My mother said, "What is all that noise?" But Bob Dylan's storytelling is just amazing. And so I do storytelling through the narrative quilts, but I think growing up in L.A. and looking at a lot of reruns on TV, old Hollywood movies, and then songs and stories, that all kind of really got embedded into me where I wanted to tell stories through my artwork. And also history, you know, but mm-hmm. Different personalities.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think quilts are important?
Well, they're part of history, both not only for the country, but for family. It's a legacy. Somebody's created it, and they created it with love and passion. And I'm sure they generally in families it was passed on to grandchildren or their own siblings or something like that. So it's something to hold on to because it's a memory, and it's a person that was constructed by hands. And so it's very special. It's art, but it's also like a legacy. So that's why I think it's very important. For the country, it's very important because it was a lifesaver for early America, for families moving across country, for pioneers, for slaves on plantations, that kept them warm in the wintertime. And so it has a very special place in American history as well as in international history.
There are many quilters in the audience that are professional quilters or quilters that aspire to be professional quilters. Do you have any words of advice for these quilters on their journey?
Just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. No, the more you do it, the more you learn, you know, different techniques. You kind of learn about yourself. Hopefully you expand and explore. And don't limit yourself, you know, kind of work out the box. You know, that's what I would say.
Do you remember your first quilt show? The first show you were ever in?
Let's see, I have to clear out 40 years ago, first quilt show. It might have been something in a community center, I think. Maybe not even in the city, maybe in Connecticut. I think there was a community center in Hartford, Connecticut, that I was in a show. And I think I had a couple of pieces in that show. There was a vague memory of that.
I remember that.
Oh, you do? Okay. Tell me about it.
That's how I met Ed. Miller.
Okay.
And Jonathan.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was my first quilt show back then.
Okay. Also, have in your quilting, has it afforded you travel? Have you traveled with any of the shows that you've been in a multitude of shows around the world?
Well, I have been to a few shows. Most people assume that the quilter goes with the show and then with the quilt, but I tell people, no, I don't get invited. You know, just the quilt goes.
I ask. The reason I ask is because so many people here today have come up to me and said, I've never seen him before. Is that really Michael Cummings? So this is why I asked.
Yeah, a few occasions I have volunteered to go to a show, but one of the big times that I had an exciting time was I got invited to go have a show in Japan. So round trip ticket, and they shipped all my work, and I was there for 10 days in Yokohama. Mm-hmm. And that was a wonderful, it was an annual quilt convention show.
Yeah.
And basically, Japanese quilters, but they invited outsiders. They had, I think it was three or four of us from different countries that were there, and that was very exciting. And a few times in other places in the United States. I was up at Bates College, and they invited me over there, and I showed there.
Is there a favorite exhibition?
Let's see.
You better say Spirits of the Core.
Well, one that I've attended, maybe. Bates College had a good one for me, because they had just completed the gallery. A new gallery, so it was a brand new space, nice lighting, wall space, and all like that. Yeah,
great. Have you noticed within the quilt community any quilters, young quilters, or new quilters whose work you find exciting and different, and that says something?
No, I do look at quilt magazines or publications, and but I can't really name anyone.
Okay.
Can you?
A few.
Okay. All right.
I'm right now. I'm going to open this up to questions from the audience. Questions for Michael. Anyone? Oh. Okay.
Hi, Mr. Cummings. Do you have in your head a quilt that you haven't quite, that you haven't made yet? Like, is there something that you must make before you hang up all of your sewing machine, shut it down?
Well, I won't say it's on my bucket list, but I do have an idea that I'd like to do a series of quilts of my experience growing up in Los Angeles, going to the beach, going to the park, just the whole outdoor living, and also winter in Los Angeles, too. I remember growing up, my father would bring home a different colored Christmas tree every year because out there they spray paint them, and we had pink, blue, yellow, red. And my mother had to stop him bringing them in because I was an asthmatic, and they used car paint on the trees. And so it was very toxic. So, but I do want to do a series on growing up in Los Angeles.
Hi. Since you've been quilting for 40 years, you say, have you ever looked at some of your earlier quilts and thought, I need to rework them, or when they're finished, are they just completely finished and you never go back to them?
I never go back to them. because I'm not in the same mindset any longer. And if I start something, it would kind of be a boomerang thing and make something else not look right. So I don't try to go back.
Mr.
On that note, I have to ask you, we as quilters, well, many of us have what I call quilt ghosts, with unfinished quilts that we just fall out of love with and we never finish. Do you have any such quilts?
Yes, I do. And I actually finished one about a month ago that I had around for a couple of years. And I said, well, I should bring this to life and finish it. So I did that. Yeah. So I do have some ghost quilts, you call them?
I'm glad to know there's
ghosts. Okay. All right.
Mr. Cummings, I love how you called your sewing machine your dance partner. Have you kept the same dance partner for many years, or do you change out your dance partner every so often?
No, I have the same dance partner they've had for 40 years. I thought about replacing the dance partner, but there's no problem. So I keep the dance partner, and it does a basic straight stitch and a zigzag stitch. And it's a domestic table model that I got from Macy's. They don't sell them anymore, and it's held up. It's very good, and so it knows my moves, and I know its moves. And everything you see, all these large quilts, goes through that small sewing machine.
Yeah. I have a picture of you. I believe it's when Mark Stewart interviewed you. Mm. Among those pictures was a picture of you at the sewing machine, and that was the first time I saw that little tiny machine, and I thought, well, my goodness,
right.
These quilts are so huge. How can you do it with that tiny machine?
Right, right. Okay. So people have tried to tell me in the early beginning I should get, an industrial sewing machine, and I didn't feel I needed that, so I stuck with my dance partner.
Any other?
Yes, Mr. Cummings, do you ever collaborate with other quilters?
No, I haven't. I've created commission work, and I've worked with architects, but not quilters. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yes, I think I get that from coming from a visual artist background and having a frame or a mat around the artwork. So therefore, it's essential for me to have a border. And so some type of border, either a patchwork border or just fabric. And I'm also using binding on the border now, too. I like that extra little touch of color. So it's a requirement for me.
Okay. If I could please address your question as someone who's also got the day job and am the daughter of an artist and kind of had to struggle how to confine the muses to not later than midnight and waiting till the weekend. So within those parameters, have you discovered certain tricks of how to keep, since I thought I heard you mention you don't particularly draw, I kind of don't either, I just work directly to the design wall. Do you have particular tricks as to sort of balance between, I want to say controlling the muses, and that's not the right word, maybe containing them until your free time allows?
Well, that's been a challenge from day one because I had a 9-to-5 job, I had just bought a house that was being renovated, and I wanted to quilt. So the time was very important. I had to budget that. And so that's where the personal trainer came in terms I could really understand how much time I was spending per hour on my work. And then I had to budget my time per evening coming home from work. And so on the average, when I was working, I was putting in maybe 28, 30 hours a week because I was spending from like 7 to 8, 9, 10, almost 11 o'clock working on a quilt if I had a deadline for that quilt to be finished. And so it was a lot of discipline that had to take effect. And in the summertime, looking out the window at the sun and people out walking and doing things, and I'm in the house and saying, well, Michael, what are you doing? Are you crazy? And then I have to realize, well, this is what I wanted to do. So accept it and enjoy it. So, yeah. But balancing your time, with, and for me, it was very important.
Michael, you have large collections of art as well as quilts. Just collections, period, of lots of stuff.
Yeah, I'm kind of impulsive.
So, yes, this is why I'm asking this question. Have you made provisions for those collections?
I'm starting to think about it and discuss it and go to seminars about it because I'm not alone in this sort of situation. I went to a seminar a few years ago downtown at NYU whereby they invited senior artists to come, and they had a lawyer, a gallery, and other people representing, talking about what's going to happen to your artwork, your archives. And so they planted a lot of ideas of possibilities in our minds, in the attendance there. So I'm starting to work on that seriously because I know it's a problem. And I do have a lot of artwork, my own and other people's. And so I have to start really deciding how to distribute our, pass that around.
Right. This is a question that I deal with every day. With the Women of Color Quilters Network and my own collection. Mm-hmm. So I'm always asking about collections and if provisions have been made for those collections. And I think it's important for us as artists. We're creating work constantly. And one of the things we have to think about is the afterlife.
But
of
also,
those collections.
During that course of going to the seminar and meeting some other groups, archiving your work as well. And so I've started to use some programs, applications in my computer, whereby I download a photograph and a sort of an outline of what the work is about in terms of the date, age, size, and different things like that. So it's a printout that I could use or anyone else could use to see what I have in my collection.
You want to elaborate a little bit more about that and talk about the software?
I don't know the name of the software. Somebody passed it on to me, but it was free. I know that. And perhaps you could just Google or something to find out about it.
Yeah, it's very important that we inventory everything that we have, everything that we make. You have to keep documentation and an inventory of it. So that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
It's very
to know.
Important.
I have to say also in working with you, Michael was the first male quilter, and right now we still have only 5 in the Women of Color Quilters Network. And I honestly think now it's about time to change the name after 30 years to include the 5 men that have been in the network. Really, it's time to change the name. Sorry.
I remember those early years and the debate about should we keep the name, change the name, and it remained the same.
Right.
But I got accepted.
Well, you know we love you, so So I'm going to change the name.
Okay,
it'll be reflective.
Okay.
So, are there any other questions? Yes.
Have you ever considered using Story Patch to?
Well, I'll consider it now. And I... Thank you.
I was asking about the time. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Yes.
Okay, generally, it has taken me about 2 months. I give myself 2 months to complete a top. And I take it out, look at it, work on it, put it back. And then, like I said, improvisation, sometimes spontaneity kicks in, and I might see something that I want to put on it that I hadn't thought about before. And then embellishments, they come along, in, you know, different objects I might want to put. I've been using a lot of three-dimensional objects recently. But the bottom line is I give myself about 2 months to complete a quilt. On my website, because I don't possess them any longer, all 12 of them. I mentioned one was at City College here in New York at the Music Library. One's at Michigan State University Art Museum. And then there's in books, a variety of books that I have some in. But website, you could see all 12 of them, and the image enlarges as you click on it.
What's your website?
MichaelCummings.com.
Also, Michael was interviewed by the Smithsonian.
Right, for oral history.
Yes. Yeah. A complete long oral history is on the Smithsonian Institution's website, where you were interviewed maybe 15 years ago, 10 years ago.
Time goes fast so fast. 10 or 15 years ago,
okay.
Right.
Well, he also has a quilt in the collection of the Smithsonian's American Museum of Art, as well as this oral history in the American Museum of Art's archives, oral history archives. And that's accessible online. Okay. So anyone that wants to hear that can freely access it online.
We've got two more questions.
Michael, thank you so much for being here today and sharing your work with us. You talked about how your process is one of visualization to cloth. How do you know when you're done?
Like I said, the quilt tells me. I just work and work and work, and then I step back. And if I feel I can't put one more piece of fabric on there, I stop. I've kind of reached that conclusion very easily now. I've been doing it for so long. I just kind of know when I should stop, and I can't go any further. But I say the quilt tells me.
One more question?
And thank you again for being here. Along those same lines, your work seems to have a very clear style and voice now, but did you always have that from the beginning, or how long did it take you to develop that? Because I'm a fairly new quilter and feel like I'm still looking for what my true style and voice
right.
is in my quilting.
It was an evolution. I mean, coming from a painting background, I started off with still lives, you know, and flowers and fruits and different other objects. And then I kind of went on to explore the possibility of using form in my artwork. And that grew. And then I got into storytelling. And then now I'm actually even writing words onto the surface of the quilts. So, and then it depends on what direction you want to go in terms of, I kind of swayed over to African American history and pulled out celebrities and events to put into my quilts. And so, but it's a gradual process. You know, you have to feel comfortable about it. I was very comfortable doing still lifes for a long time, looking at Matisse and the colors and his compositions. But I gradually started to get more into more storytelling, working with Carolyn and the exhibits that she produced and the themes that we had to work with that really expanded my imagination and compositions.
Well, I want to thank Michael for coming to
you're welcome.
Thank you both. That was incredible. And I want to remind everyone that this interview will be archived in the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. QSOS is the only oral history collection of its kind about quilt makers archived at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. And thank you so much. What a good job interviewing, too. Thank you.